You're listening to The Watchers, a show where two women from opposite ends of New Jersey watch movies and TV about something that maybe hits a little too close to home.
Yeah. Yep, maybe a little.
Just a little.
I watched this in 2021.
I told you, I'm Andrea, this is Jody, we watched Station 11.
Hey! I don't know who that was. Hey!
That was Jody Bergen County.
That's right. Wrong podcast.
That was North Jersey Jody for sure.
Wrong podcast.
I, in my head, remembered this airing earlier in the pandemic. So when I Googled it as I was watching it to be like, it was late enough that I felt a little better. But
December 2021, yeah.
I mean, we were deep in it, but far enough that I think we were all kind of bored by it at that point. Even those of us who were suffering were also kind of suffering in a bored way. Does that make sense?
Yeah. December 16th, 2021 is when the pilot aired. And so that was our, oh Lord, second fall / winter of the pandemic. So, yeah, I mean, I had been teaching since the previous fall in person with masks and tests and all that nonsense, but it was still full going, like, mm-hmm. you know, it was still,
but I mean, we were outside a little more and interacting with, yeah.
Yeah. But it definitely was not, certainly, I mean, it's not still not over. It's COVID's still out there, but it was very much not over.
Right. But we knew what it was and how it was spread a little better. And
yeah.
the kind of mystery of it, I think. Not that it's so hard to talk about because there's still stuff we don't know or understand
and exactly.
all of that. But I think we felt more like we at least understood what was affecting us in a way that we didn't in March of 2020. In the way that it felt watching these people in this pilot. It was... I had a harder time than I thought I was going to.
Yeah, when we get into the background stuff, after we kind of go through the episode a little bit, I have some stuff to say about the filming of this and how it intersected with the actual pandemic. But yeah, watching it again, like, I remember that first episode feeling like, I don't know if I want to watch this. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. what happened was... I started watching it after I think the first three episodes or so had dropped. HBO released these as a 3-2-2-1. So somebody, I think it was one of the guys on the watch on the Ringer Network said, like, referred to it as like a playoff structure, like three games, like a home away, you know what I'm saying. But that's how they released it. So after the first three episodes came out, The Watch, which is the podcast I'm constantly referencing on The Ringer, did an episode literally titled, "We're in the middle of a pandemic, so why do we love Station 11 so much?" And I listened to that, and their rapturous love of this show after only having seen three episodes convinced me to start it. Mm. And they also gave the warning that I gave you, which is the first episode is really rough, and then after that you kind of... you're in the future, whether it's a little bit in the future or a lot in the future. You're out of the people coughing in a theater, frantically getting groceries in a store. Like the stuff that for us is like, Jesus Christ, like that stuff is only in episode one.
I'm just going to get this out of the way now. Mm-hmm. I did have to watch episode two. and so I just want to co-sign that if you also watched this episode and liked it, but struggled with that, it definitely feels much better in episode two.
All of that triggering stuff is done after this.
It's when Jeevan's sister is talking to the children in that one room and like checking in to see how they're feeling, and then she closes the door and immediately starts coughing, and it's just like, just you know, I know so many people who work in the medical field. Is that what you call it?
Yeah. Yes.
It didn't seem right. Who work in the medical field and just knowing that it just... Can I say something really horrifically kind of I don't know if morbid's the right word.
Go for it.
I think what made this watchable is I was like, well, I know we didn't have a 99% mortality rate.
No, I mean,
Our pandemic was a little better.
Right. Like, I think that's the only reason this even got made is because it was an extreme version of it. Like,
it's like the have some perspective, people.
Right. Right. Exactly. The entire earth wasn't wiped clean of people. Yeah. Just, you know, a lot of people died. Great. But yeah, no, it was much, much worse than this and much quicker. So
that was really, because I jokingly said to you, when there's that shocking scene when that plane goes down, and I text you, I said, even the planes have the flu.
Yeah.
It's like these people are dying so fast.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. It's basically like almost overnight it happens.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. We're kind of all over the place button. It's interesting that it's not the flu that kills Arthur.
Or is it?
I mean, I don't think so.
They say it's a heart attack, but it could have been a heart attack because he got the flu or whatever. You never know.
Yeah, I guess that's...
I always kind of assumed that it was related.
Does he cough and stuff in that scene? I'm trying to remember.
No, but he looks real sick.
Yeah.
He, like, the shots of him speaking on stage and acting, he doesn't look well. And it could be the precursor to a heart attack. It could also be that he was sick and then he had a heart attack.
Right.
Or that he collapsed of the flu and they thought it was a heart attack because they didn't know the flu was coming.
Right. That's also true.
Because, I mean, that dude in the car
that
was, like, running into the tree, you know.
And he's a little young to be playing Lear, I think.
Yeah. I had always assumed that it was actually the flu that killed him.
Interesting, yeah.
Even though they thought,
I guess you're probably right. That makes more sense.
Yeah. Just to start, the episode is titled Wheel of Fire. The series was written by Patrick Somerville. This episode and episode 3 were both directed by Hiro Murai, also known for Atlanta. He works with Donald Glover a lot. He directed the This Is America music video, which is an incredible video. Patrick Somerville, also known for The Leftovers, for working on that show.
Mm-hmm.
And as we said last week, this whole thing is based on the novel by Emily St. John Mandel. This episode is in December 2020. Famous actor Arthur Leander dies on stage during a Chicago production of King Lear. Audience member Jeevan Chowdhury, who attempts to help despite his inexperience, accompanies abandoned child actor Kirsten Raymond home. On the way, Jeevan receives a call from his doctor, Sister Sia, warning that a deadly virus has come from Asia into America. That was another thing that I was like, yikes. Unable to contact Kirsten's parents at her home, Jeevan and Kirsten are forced to buy several grocery carts worth of food and barricade themselves inside the apartment of Jeevan's brother, Frank, a writer. From his windows, they watch a plane fall from the sky and crash. 80 days later, Jeevan and Kirsten leave the apartment to a snowy wasteland filled with abandoned cars, humanity having been decimated by the flu pandemic. 20 years later, adult Kirsten rehearses a play while reading a copy of a graphic novel called Station 11 that had once been given to Arthur Leander. Mm-hmm. So that is our basic structure. Sort of a crash headlong into a pandemic, and then 20 years later, we... see a tiny, tiny glimpse of what's coming.
You know, I love a multiple timeline show. So this was right up my alley.
So do we want to talk a little bit about the episode itself, the background? Where do we want to go to from here? You had said that you're in charge of vibes today. So do we want to go to vibes first and then I'll give you some background?
I know this is maybe something we'll get into more specifically a little later in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
But I was so impressed with how quickly they establish who these characters are for us.
Yeah.
Jeevan he's just, you understand him so perfectly.
I know.
His like call to help Arthur.
Mm-hmm.
Great. His call to help, or his like instinct to help Arthur despite not being a doctor and having no idea what to do.
Nope.
And being the only one to get up and do that.
Yep.
And then so everything he does after that, where it's like maybe not the wisest choice, but he really does seem to be doing what he thinks is best from minute one. It's really sweet.
Yes. I feel like you know Jeevan immediately.
So fast.
Yeah.
So fast.
And even if that one scene doesn't give you enough, like the interactions between him and Kirsten for the rest of the episode, they give you everything else you need.
And they're weirdly so believable, even though they kind of shouldn't be.
Yeah.
like he does kidnap that child.
Yeah. But she knows she's being kidnapped.
Totally. She is incredible. Again, that, this is probably Matilda for Lawler, later.
I know, but man, like this show would not be nearly as good without an actor, a child actor, that has that much presence.
Yeah. Especially because the little, like, overly precocious, kind of like adultified child because she's in showbiz should be so annoying. And I love her so much. Mm-hmm. She's just great. It's really impressive.
She's fantastic. I loved her so much. Her little, I'm eight. Like,
she also has my favorite maybe line read in the whole episode is when Jeevan is lying to the front desk person at Frank's apartment. Mm-hmm. And so the guy's like, your brother Jeevan is here with your niece. Yeah. She says, hi, Uncle Frank.
Yeah. Yeah.
Smart.
She's really very quick,
good.
You know?
She's really good.
She's really good. And like, we don't really get to see much of Frank in this first episode, but yeah, I mean, his reticence to see his brother at all, that's kind of a hint as to what's coming. Mm-hmm. But yeah, seeing the relationship between Kirsten and Jeevan this early, maybe to talk a little bit about some of the stuff behind the scenes. So we're not going to go into great detail about the difference between the book and the movie or and the TV show, because some of it is very spoilery, but the relationship between Kirsten and Jeevan is much, much, much more significant in the show. Their relationship with each other, they're both significant characters in the book, but their relationship with each other is such an important thread in the TV show that, that wasn't necessarily there in the novel. So they establishing that from the first scene, I think, was really important.
Kind of need. Yeah. And they do a great job of it.
They really do. This is only a 10 episode series too, which is, there's not more coming, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it.
Interesting. I paused just now to look up episode titles.
Mm-hmm.
Because my assumption was that they would all be Shakespeare references.
Mm.
And they are. Some of them are. This one is. This one is, and it's a really curious one, I think.
The Wheel of Fire?
Mm-hmm.
Say how, for those of us that are not Shakespeare smart.
All I want to do is talk about Shakespeare. I don't know how much of it is relevant for this episode of the podcast. So some of it certainly is.
Yeah.
But I'm absolutely going to end up watching the rest of this series. So if we get to 10 million downloads, Patreon will start a mini series where we watch every episode. The play, obviously, that that they're putting on when Arthur dies is King Lear.
Yes.
Wheel of Fire is a reference to a line from Lear.
Act 4, Scene 7. I say that like I knew without Wikipedia, but I did not.
But I'm bound upon a wheel of fire that mine own tears do scald like molten lead. But it's one that's used outside of that. And it's what Shakespeare is so good at, and what is especially true in Lear, is like your protagonist making one bad decision, usually because of some fatal flaw in their person that draws them to do whatever this thing is. Usually it's pride. For
That's
Lear,
so interesting. It is absolutely.
Yeah, it is. For Lear, it's absolutely pride. And then it's sort of like what happens after that is almost out of their control. It's like they start the dominoes and it, you know, this fatal mistake. And it's for someone who's only watched this first episode and thinking about it in terms of the pandemic that hits them. You don't get a lot of choice in that. And then the Wheel of Fire then being the torturous, you know, outcome. So for leaders,
I think as you continue to watch this, you will make connections to that based on Arthur's arc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I know next to nothing about Arthur at this point, even with episode two.
Right. Yeah, so one thing to know about this in terms of structure, this show, which doesn't really spoil anything, is that the episodes kind of, they're not standalone, but they are very specifically located, each one. So according to one of the articles I read, the even numbered chapters trace adult Kirsten's journeys with the theater company, and then the odd chapters are sort of disparate threads that are connected. Mm-hmm. Obviously, everything in this is connected.
Right.
But in those even numbered episodes, we're in other places.
Interesting.
So,
like spokes on a great wheel.
Almost like spokes on a wheel, yes. Wheels are very, very commonly referenced in this as you may have found out in episode 2. Yes. We won't go into it. The tour.
Yes. I'm also wondering, you can tell me this. I don't think it'll be a spoiler. Mm-hmm. Gael Garcia Bernal, who plays Arthur, mm-hmm. is he playing older in this episode so that we can flash back to him younger?
No.
Is he aged up?
Mm-mm.
That's interesting.
He's aged up on stage to look like more like Lear, I think.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Not that it really matters, and it's not always the case, but Lear is typically like the play that really serious theater actors want to do in their older age.
Yeah.
Right? Think like Ian McKellen. I think Patrick Stewart has done it. Of course, yeah. They're the first two I think of because they're best friends forever. So it's interesting that he would be... Again, it's not unprecedented, I don't think. And I don't know as much about the like production side of like current Shakespeare to say. But it's my understanding is that he'd be a little young to be playing him, and I just wonder if that's
somewhat addressed. Thing. It's somewhat addressed later on.
It looks like in real life right now he's 45, so let's say he's playing 40-ish. It's not crazy, but it is a little young.
Yeah. No, episode... So the way that this thing is structured is like... So you watched episode 2, which jumps into 20 years into the future. Mm-hmm. Episode 3 jumps back before the pandemic and covers like Arthur and Miranda.
But is he like in his 20s then?
No.
Okay.
No, he's younger, but he's not that young.
Okay.
It's about 10 years earlier, actually. Maybe, yeah, you're right.
So maybe they're assuming
it jumps back further.
Yeah, so maybe we're supposed to think he's...
Yeah, you might be right.
Arthur is older here. That makes me feel a little better.
Yeah. And then episode 4 is like 1 year after the pandemic, and then 5 is right after... It's like they're jumping around in time and location.
It's cool. I like that.
Yeah.
Total side note, but while we're talking about aging people down, you and I have both finished Fallout.
Yes, we have.
Is it a...
That was this, quick.
Yeah.
We did that last week.
I loved it. I finished it
before you, which is wild.
Yeah, I know. But
well,
I finished
you work
it,
more than I do. Is,
but I also never, famously never finish anything I start watching. So it's pretty, saying something. I'm going to be very careful not to spoil anything. But obviously Kyle MacLachlan, we know, plays Lucy's father. We see a younger him and they do some CGI or whatever to do it. And it's so funny to see somebody who you know exactly what they look like at the age they've been de-aged to. I'm like, that's not Agent Coop. It's a little unsettling. Almost like it wasn't quite Uncanny Valley for me, but it was close. Also, if you watch the first episode and aren't sure if you want to continue, I highly recommend you do. It's very hijinksy in a way I wasn't expecting.
Yeah,
it's really light and fun for the most part.
Yeah. I lost a little bit of steam with it towards the end, but I finished it. I was enjoying myself enough to go through and finish at the end. I also think I just watched it too much at once. You know?
Yeah, it took me about a week, and I think it took you, what, 2 days? So
maybe a little more than that.
So maybe like an episode or two a night if you watch, you'll be
I finished
happy with it.
All 5 seasons of 6 Feet Under since we did our pilot episode. I was fucking sobbing last night.
That's
oh my
so
god.
Funny.
Sobbing like a child. Lord. Whew. That was a rough one. Anyway, Station 11. We said we were going to talk about vibes, and we kind of did. What would you say the vibes of this are? And I'm specifically curious because we just watched another post-apocalyptic show.
Well, this feels more like, at least this first episode, more like what I expect. Like Fallout, I think, is a surprising post-apocalyptic show. This episode, why is Fallout surprising or why is this one not?
Just
or
because
both?
I want to kind of define the differences between the two.
I was assuming that you know nothing about the Fallout universe in general going into that pilot. I was very surprised at how humorous and how matter of fact they were and how lightly they took it. Though it makes sense. In a way, because and how irreverent it is and mm-hmm. I keep wanting to say sacred. It's not the word I want, but like un precious they are about life and death. Mm-hmm. Though it does make sense when you know you're 200 years in the future, as opposed to at the most we get is 20.
Right.
But it feels, this feels darker and more serious. And even the humor in it is, it's also a totally different setting. It's a much more real world setting. So that makes sense too. But it just, it just felt way more human.
Yeah.
I think.
To me, it feels like the reason I was like trying to pinpoint the language is because every time I've heard this show talked about by people who watched the whole thing, they use phrases like emotional or human. Like this is like I said, this is the roughest in terms of real feeling pandemic stuff that it gets. And it's really, it ends up feeling more like a show that's about life instead of about death. And I think the one thing that Fallout, for all of its humor and sarcasm and satire, is still really about death.
Yeah, it's bleak in a different way.
Yeah.
It's bleak in a way that is, it's like sometimes I was laughing at how dark and I'll just say bleak again. It was.
Yeah. And this tends to, as it goes on, it's almost like I cried so much towards the end of the show, but in a way that was like, it's life affirming. Like art matters. Like, you know,
his name is Art.
Yeah. It has that. What did you say?
His name, Arthur. Art.
Oh, Jesus. Yes, that's true. But yeah, it has a much more unapologetically sincere bent to it as it goes. Like the last thing that Fallout is sincere.
Totally.
So that to me was the big difference. And I was the reason I asked was because I was curious if you got some of that from the first episode or if that's something that I know from seeing the whole thing.
No, I think that's totally right.
I'm also curious, like, it's interesting to think about the aesthetic of Fallout and how we talked about how colorful and cheerful it was compared to things like Last of Us, Walking Dead, other post-apocalyptic things, because I feel like Station Eleven also has a very specific color palette, and it's neither of those things. It's not dark post-apocalyptic, and you know this now because you saw the second episode. We won't necessarily spoil anything, but it doesn't have that, like, everything is gray and green and blue look, but it also doesn't have the, like, poppy atomic era look of the other one.
No, it feels very natural. And I mean, it's, I feel like it's not really a spoiler here, especially because you get a little bit of it at the very end.
At the end.
But it's just very green and natural. And to bring it back to Shakespeare, we talked a little bit during our Yellow Jackets watch, I think, about the green world. It's like the green world theory that seems to be a little bit at play here in an interesting way, because it's always like green world is where you go to like act out what you can't in the civilized world, and you eventually return to civilization and you right the wrongs out in the green world and then come back and things are put right. But here we don't have a civilization to return to. All we have is this sort of natural world. So that's an interesting thing.
It's almost like you read the Vox article that I was thinking of when I asked you that question.
Oh, really?
Well, they don't mention the green world, but if I could just read a quote, which I love to do. Television has been overwhelmed by a glut of series that lean too heavily on gray, murky visuals and digital color grading that reduces too much of the picture to dishwater mush. If Station 11 failed on every other level, it would at least be worth watching for how it bucks this trend. The post-apocalyptic sections burst with a natural color palette dominated by green. The mid-apocalyptic sections are stark white thanks to the snow everywhere, with warmer tones for the apartment where Jeevan, Kirsten, and Frank hole up. And the sections in the past are warmer still, as various characters remember their happiest moments, which we haven't seen yet. The use of color allows viewers to instantly know where they are in the show's timeline, which can feel overly complicated otherwise. So it's also used as like a marker of where you are in the show. And it does really, it works. It keeps you kind of on track on in a show that really jumps around a lot.
That's interesting. The warmth in their apartment is really interesting too, because I did notice that, and it feels where you're figuring out, because it jumps around in time, but then figuring out where the sort of linchpin of it all is. In first watching, it feels like it should be when the pandemic hits, and then everything is either jumping forward or backward from there. But when they get into that apartment, and I guess in the theater too, and the one scene, one or two scenes we get with Arthur's friend getting ready to leave for the funeral and his partner won't come with him. They all feel kind of flashbacky, dreamy, a little gauzy, not totally, but like, but again, that little bit of warmth in it. I was just going to say that makes me feel like actually maybe what our present in the show is that 20 years in the future. That's where the like mysteries and those kinds of things are really happening. It feels to me I've gotten.
To me, even though it's technically happening in the present as we're watching it, those scenes with Clark, who's his friend, and with Jeevan and Frank and Kirsten, that gauziness that you're talking about, like, it reminds me of how unreal it felt in the moment during the pandemic.
Totally.
Like, during lockdown, you feel like, I felt like I was in a fucking movie all the time. I would walk around my neighborhood and be like, whoa.
Totally.
Where are we? Like, it had that weird gauzy feeling.
Yeah. I have a really specific memory of one of the like few and far between times fairly early into things where I went to Target. And like fully bundled up with the gloves on, like peeking out between a mask and a scarf, just totally. And there were five other people in the store, and like
that grocery store scene was intense. There was an article that I was reading about how watching it from the middle of a pandemic was like how accurate it was, and also how it was almost more concerning that you could point out the moments that were wrong as it compares to your pandemic.
Right.
So like they go around the supermarket and there's stuff on all the shelves, but no people there, as opposed to when you went to the supermarket and there was nothing on the shelves and people desperate to get toilet paper. Like those moments that are like, actually, no, I know what a real one was like, and this is what happened. You know,
especially that early on. I mean, they do the smart thing of he gets a little bit of a jump on it because his sister is a nurse, a doctor. I forget what she does exactly, but
she's like an emergency room doctor.
Yeah, because his sister works in a hospital. So she's got, which was true. We were hearing about it from the medical professionals in our lives being like, this is more serious than they're saying. And so he does get a little bit of a jump on it.
And I mean, that is the thing that saves him. You know, she says, and in the moment when you first watch it and she's like, go to Frank's and barricade the door, like, Jesus Christ. Like, it's like, feels like such an escalation.
Well, there are a couple of moments watching where I was like, is this going to be a zombie thing? And I just didn't know.
Yeah, barricade the door, because that's what it makes you think of.
And when they come across that guy in his car.
Yeah.
And he's still alive, but still laying on the, but well enough to have tried to get out of the car, like that's really, really unsettling, because you're not totally sure. But it's like, well, if they've got, although I guess if they've got a really bad case of the flu, which is what this is probably, he's probably got a really high fever, and that makes folks act all kinds of crazy when their brain is boiling. So who knows?
I mean, that's the thing. Like, I definitely felt like that feeling that you got when Jeevan was like, no, don't get out of the car, was like how I felt every fucking time somebody coughed in one of my classes, or every time like somebody walked too close to me in a store, even though we were all masked, just being like, you are standing too close to me. Like, just that panic, like imagining the germs just like jumping towards me. What do I want to say? Cut this. So I just want to cover a little bit of background, and then maybe we can go through our like usual criteria.
Sounds good.
So like I said, it's based on the book. The book obviously was written far before we had our own pandemic, but the series also started filming before the pandemic. They filmed the pilot, the one that we just watched, in 2019 at the end of the year.
Fascinating.
December 2019. And the thing that really occurred to me when I watched it this time was like, there was an audience of like 400 extras in that theater. They could not have filmed that during the pandemic. It would have been like CGI.
So it's actually kind of lucky for them that this is the show they were making, where now we don't have to worry about filling up buildings with extras to make it look legitimate.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
So they filmed the pilot and then things kind of shut down. And they had been filming in, so the original novel is based in Toronto. But they were filming in Chicago. Patrick Somerville wanted, he's from there. He wanted to have it based there for the, for his version of it. And, ironically, during the, due to the pandemic, they actually had to shut down shooting in Chicago and move back up to Canada. And they ended up shooting the rest of it outside of Toronto, which is where the novel actually takes place.
Huh.
Yeah.
I kind of, I mean, maybe it's statesy of me. That's what we call us, right? To be like, I like that it's Chicago.
I know. I know. Well, and in the story, as it goes on in the show, even though it was filmed outside of Toronto, it takes place around one of the Great Lakes. So, which is shared. So,
yeah, I guess it's, I guess, yeah, fine. Okay, fine.
I also, a fun little, or less fun for the actor, note from that first episode, they filmed it in Chicago, obviously, because the shots on the L and all of that. That the night that they filmed the scene of them getting off the train was apparently like the coldest day in Chicago in years. It was 3 degrees with a minus 30 wind chill.
Oh my
God. They were shooting those scenes of Jeevan getting off the train and having a panic attack.
Jesus.
Yeah. He, for people that don't know, there is actually a podcast that goes along with this show that's just called the Station 11 podcast that Patrick Somerville is an integral part of. And in the first episode of the podcast where they cover the pilot, they interview Himesh Patel, who plays Jeevan. And he tells Patrick Somerville how sick he got after shooting that scene.
Oh, no.
Who, and he didn't know. He was like, you didn't tell me. He's like, I'm not going to tell the showrunner that I'm horribly ill. I will say that if you listen to that podcast, you will come to know Patrick Somerville as a very squishy, sentimental, like sincere human, which relates very clearly once you've watched this entire series to the show itself. And actually listening to him talk about this and knowing what we have talked about and things we've talked about watching, I actually now do kind of want to watch the pilot to Leftovers because he it's not his show, but he wrote on that show.
Cool. I mean, I'd be interested.
I'm curious. Yeah. But that's, I mean, that's mostly what I know background wise, just the timing of it all being so crazy where they started shooting at the beginning of the pandemic or before
really
the pandemic and then had to finish it during.
I wonder how much that affected the writing.
Yeah.
Interested.
I mean, it sounded to me like the writing was mostly set by the time they were filming. I mean, I'm sure stuff changes in the moment and how they had to shoot everything changed. But I think for the most part, it was because they were working based on the novel and Patrick Somerville kind of knew which changes he wanted to make. I don't think it actually changed that much other than the technical parts of shooting.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Another side note, the show was, I think because of its subject matter, it didn't receive, it got some critical notice, but maybe not as much as it would have if it was a different subject.
Yeah. It seemed to me like a show where everything I heard about it was from actual people being like, the show is actually really good, despite it not getting a ton of attention and being pretty under the radar.
Yeah. It was nominated for 7 Emmys.
Oh, okay. And so, not totally under the radar.
No, not totally. But I think that, like, when you think about the acting, just in the initial... So Himesh Patel was nominated for Outstanding Lead Actor in a Limited or Anthology Series. But, like,
Everybody should have been. Everyone was great.
Yeah, not Miranda. So Matilda Lawler. Like, yeah, no, everybody is great. The guy that plays someone that we won't talk about yet... but the person that you saw introduced in the last episode, he is also incredible. Yeah. I also think it's interesting that the the line that they use in this show over and over again, survival is insufficient, mm-hmm. as the motto of the Shakespeare troupe that Kirsten mm-hmm. is in, which this, again, is looking ahead, which we shouldn't be doing, but is borrowed from an episode of Star Trek Voyager.
Funny. Oh, that's yeah. fun.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Yeah. Sorry, what were you going to say? I cut you off.
No, I was just thinking about when we get to the question section and just thinking about shifts and stuff that happen are really interesting.
That's yeah. funny. Why don't we go there now? That's all the background I've got.
Okay, cool. Thank you for sharing that. I think that's really fascinating. And I can't wait to... I really love when we cover shows that I already know like the back of my hand so I can get nitty gritty in the research. Do we want to jump in to
our... Yeah, let's do it. I'm ready.
So, shall we talk? We talked character a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything...
Well, set and setting we usually start with, right?
Yes, you're right.
Or hook. And then we'll get this at some point. We start with the hook.
Yeah.
Which is pretty clearly, you know, global flu pandemic happens. Sort of bumbling man ends up with a award he didn't anticipate.
It's a trope I love.
Yeah.
And reluctant father figure. Yes,
seriously. Oh, God. And then they end up sort of holing up for a while and the mm-hmm. world ends around them. And then they venture off. And that's all we get.
Yeah.
They venture off into the winter.
What happens? What did we say last week? It's like what happens after the world ends, basically.
Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah. It's another one of those.
Exactly. And I think that there's an ominous feeling that you get at the very end when they're heading out into the winter. Because you're like, mm-hmm. okay, if they're leaving in the middle of this,
yeah,
why are they leaving?
It right? seemed, because it's day 80,
yeah.
too, where they venture out. And it seemed, that felt a little early to me. As someone who yes. spent many days indoors. But I guess there's, you know, they had $10,000 worth of groceries. But there's probably not a whole lot to do but hang out and snack and like... So
they didn't ration well. Yeah. But no, yeah, I think we do find out a little bit more about why they left when they did later on. But it's enough of a hint that something is happening that is not mm-hmm. great that they yeah. had to leave during that weather.
And not just that, like, because if it's just Jeevan's going out to see, you know, if he can find help or something, why would you bring the child with you?
Yeah. There's no, a reason it that seems you... like they're leaving.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Do we want to talk about the setting a bit more?
Sure.
This feels like a very Chicago show.
Mm-hmm.
Like the presence of the L, the theater scene, like as somebody who used to spend a good decent amount of time in Chicago, hasn't in a while, but it felt very like purposefully not just any city. Like it felt mm-hmm. like Chicago.
Yeah. I've only been to Chicago once. My housemate who I watched this with, Kitsy, lived in Chicago for a few years and kept doing the thing that I would be doing if it were mm-hmm. Sanjury, being like, oh no, not the Navy Pier.
Like, of course, yeah. yes. That so. Was, I mean, it's like when we watched Fallout and they showed Santa Monica Pier, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, it also shows that Jeevan's brother lives in a very nice building that has a view of Navy Pier.
Pulitzer.
He won a Pulitzer, correct.
So.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
One of my favorite lines, actually, that Jeevan says is like, when Kirsten asks him what kind of job he has. He says, I'm a reporter. I'm like a reporter. I had a website. I create content. I don't have a job.
It's really good.
It's a great a little bit. Progression.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's great. But yeah, the apartment building itself to me has a really strong presence. Like that's a really iconic looking building, and it mm-hmm. feels very Chicago to me. It feels a very Midwestern giant building.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that's probably a famous building, actually. Yeah, so the apartment that they are in, Frank's apartment, is in Lake Point Tower, which seems to be a pretty recognizable apartment building in Chicago on Lakeshore Drive.
So I'm looking at Roscoe Spectrum, which is a blog run by Roscoe, which you have just informed me is a lighting brand.
That's cool.
And this blog looks really cool and super specific and way more up your alley than mine. But
yeah, I'm super into this.
There now, while we're talking set and setting, this is kind of perfect. I'm just going to read this little section about this apartment because it's you're so right. Many scenes of the award-winning drama were scripted to take place inside a 42nd floor apartment on Chicago's Lakeshore Drive with panoramic views of a snowy Navy pier and an iced over Lake Michigan. Their production designer, Ruth Ammon, and their supervising art director, Alan Glover, were nominated for their work on Station 11 at the ADG Awards, which is cool. This is a little bit of an advertisement for Roscoe Softrop.
So, of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course it is. Huh. This isn't as expensive as I thought it would be. So I looked up the cost of a rental in Frank's building.
Mm-hmm.
And currently you can rent a junior one bedroom for $2,100 a month.
Oh, yeah.
Which, given the views.
We live in, where you live is not super cheap either, right?
So not anymore. It used to be.
I was going to say, we live in cities that are, at least I do, that is, I think, pretty comparable to Chicago. So that sounds about
right.
And I
think about, you know, most of my friends live in Boston and New York. And
right, exactly.
So that, to me, I was like, oh, wow, that's actually quite cheap.
Yeah. So,
although, two bedroom, 2,500 square feet, $6,000 a month.
There we go.
More like it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the setting for 2020, I guess, that it's supposed to be.
Yeah. We get very little of the 20 years later.
Well, first we get 2 years later. We get 2020.
Yes.
Let's do this just for setting wise. Mm-hmm. 2020, which we've talked a bit about. Then we get day 80, which is where winter's hit. This is the yellow jackets, where it's like, man, if day 80 had been in June, you know,
yeah,
they might have been in better shape. But it's day 80 and they are in the dead of Chicago winter.
Yeah.
And it is brutal.
Right, obviously. On the water, too. Mm-hmm. Like right on the lake. You can feel how cold that shit is.
I truly can't imagine. So we get 2020, day 80. And then we get a 20-year jump. But before that, there's something. And this is where I started to get a little confused.
Yes.
We get a shot from the space station, I guess.
Station 11.
But it... Is this show, I guess we don't know. I'm assuming that's current, that this is a person who's in space who knows that the world has basically ended. And it's like, how am I getting back? Right. But
I don't know how much I want to say.
Don't answer this question for me.
Okay. I won't.
Just based on what I saw in the pilot. This doesn't feel like a show that's going to have any fantasy or supernatural elements to it. It
right.
felt pretty grounded.
Yep.
But.
Except the astronaut.
Yeah. That's the Station 11 astronaut that the book is.
Mm-hmm.
That reminded me of Lost with the comic book. And you, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little, so that's, I guess we're in, I just jumped us into questions. What's up mm-hmm. with that?
Yeah. And I'm not going to answer that question. Mm-hmm. But I will say that. In the most cryptic way I can possibly say it, this is a show about stories.
Those are my favorite kind.
This is a show about the stories we tell ourselves and the stories that we tell other people
uh-huh.
and the stories that get us through and the stories we cling to deal with our lives. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
And that's all I care about. So
yeah.
That
and I also, well, I'll say one more thing. I lied. the other thing I'll say is that piece, the comic, and it's, sort of role in all of this is teased for quite a while and not explained and for quite a while, but it is explained.
Okay, that's good to know.
I mean, I will say this show does a really good job of, and it's so funny, if I watched this having not experienced a global pandemic, I might have felt like it ended a little too cleanly.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's based on a novel and because we went through such shit over the last mm-hmm. 4 years, the way it was architected and kind of structured to kind of, I keep saying kind of and sort of, and I'm annoying myself. The way that it is structured to almost create a wheel that loops back to a point at the end that is very satisfying. That's all I'll say about that. I appreciate it very much, and I needed it when I first watched the show.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah. Yes. Any other questions that this brings up for you? What did you want to know other than who the fuck is the astronaut?
Oh, so I mean, a lot. I want to know what, because it's interesting to me that we never see, I almost called her Harper. We'll get to that. that we never see. It's interesting to me that we never see Kirsten's parents at all in this mm-hmm. episode. I know that, like, that's one of the things that was tough was the not knowing of it. But mm-hmm. they seem pretty absent. She, you know, her wrangler. There's a lot of weirdly being, I guess this is sort of a question. There's a lot of weirdly being left behind in this this pilot, because there's also that thing where Jeevan's awful girlfriend, she's awful to me anyway, just leaves. She says not feeling great. And maybe she's got a case of the flu, but she just watched him like.
Yeah, although honestly, my sympathies at the beginning are probably more with her. Like, I love Jeevan and I loved him from the beginning. But imagine dating the guy whose job is sort of having a website and is like half like is rushing onto stage onto the stage to try to save someone, but has no skills whatsoever to do so.
I don't know. It seems she knows he's about to like. That she's there with this man who just died.
Like, yeah, I don't know.
That seems like a trump card to me.
Well, so then when we hear Kirsten ask him about her later, and she says, are you going to marry her? He's like, yeah, probably. Like, he doesn't seem like he's too, like it doesn't, I don't know. I don't feel like he's
torn up about it.
No, he doesn't, I don't think it's ever mentioned again that he had a girlfriend.
Okay, that's funny.
Yeah.
So, but there is just a lot of that kind of happening here with Arthur's friend, who again, his husband or boyfriend, I'm not sure, but won't go to the funeral with him. And also annoyingly decided that an hour before they're supposed to leave, that he couldn't get off for work for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Anyway. So there's a lot of abandonment in this, this first episode. And that's interesting because my assumption is that most of this now is going to be about found family. Mm-hmm. And so that makes a kind of sense that these are people who are alone in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And I do think that's something they got right about the idea of the pandemic, because like we got to a point during like the worst of it, like the lockdown, where if you didn't live with someone, you like didn't see them for like, I didn't see my best friend for like 6 months other than on Zoom, you know? Mm-hmm. And so if you didn't live with someone, you were suddenly really alone.
Yeah.
Like, I love living alone, but like, man, whew.
Yeah.
You know, the isolation thing, even if it's not to the degree of like, you're never going to see that person again, it did kind of feel like that for a while.
Yeah, we didn't know.
Yeah.
Especially in the beginning when they kept doing the like, for 2 weeks. Three months, 6 months. And it's just like, it feels like maybe they're just going to keep saying this for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, exactly. So. But yeah, I know what you mean though about the parents. Like it does feel
like.
And
she's a theater kid in a major city. And so it all makes sense, but it's I just think it's significant.
Mm-hmm.
Or it feels like it might be. And I'm curious about why there's so much of that in this pilot, when it would have been very easy to just kill a lot of these people and have that be the way everybody ends up so alone.
Like, well, I think that, like, without revealing too much, I think that the way they did it was really purposeful, in that in this type of event, people do just disappear from your life and you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's this thing of, you know, you never see the person again. You don't know what happened to them, and you have to just accept that.
Mm-hmm. I am curious to see who makes it into year 20 with Kirsten, if the people that she takes up with are Jeevan and Frank and co, although it's just her and Jeevan who leave the apartment, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Or if she finds some new folks. I mean, we know what it's about, so we know kind of the answer to that, but I'll be interested to see how they get there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for me, I'm always like a how person. Like, I think I was one of those annoying kids that was like constantly asking why things happened and how they happened and like wanting to figure shit out. So like when I first saw this episode and Jeevan and Kirsten walk off into the winter, my brain was like, how the fuck are they supposed to survive that?
Right. Right.
You know, like, where are they going?
Mm-hmm.
Do they know if anybody's out there? Like, who's out there? How scary is it?
Is that's a question I've also had, is are they leaving because of something happening where they are, or because they're seeking something somewhere else?
Right.
Maybe there's a signal, maybe there's some sort of like message delivered somehow, that there's a camp somewhere of like people who did survive, who are kind of like gathering up, or who knows, right?
The why they're leaving and what they're going towards, and do they know or not know? Mm-hmm. Like, is it a blind fleeing from something, or is it a purposeful going towards something?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well said.
Yeah.
Absolutely agree.
And also we get that tiny glimpse of Kirsten as an adult, and like, I mean, for me, some random person that we've never seen before just comes over the dune to get her, and you're mm-hmm. like, huh? Like,
yeah.
What's going on there? Who's she hanging out with?
And she seems quite like settled,
chill,
like, kind of like, yeah.
Yeah.
Very adjusted.
Mm-hmm.
And not, she doesn't seem like anxious or anything in that scene. So it seems like she's not still fleeing, you know?
Yeah. No, she seems pretty comfortable and self-assured. Mm-hmm.
They do a really cool thing. This is bouncing back. Well, I guess we're kind of still in set. We're sort of all over. We're all over the place.
Where's the button?
Exactly. I love when they do those couple of shots of here's what it looks like now with the snow and in the middle of the pandemic. And then they'll flash to
the
overgrown, really verdant, very much like nature taking it back.
Yeah.
I love those shots so much.
I know. And it's funny, like it could be. When I rewatched it this time, I'd forgotten about those.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, like, this could be kind of cheesy
if
it's something they do a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it almost is like, it doesn't happen so much that it gets cliche. But when mm-hmm. it does happen, it reminds you of that feeling of, like, being in a place that's changed.
Yeah.
And in your mind, you remember what it looked like before, mm-hmm. you know?
And it weirdly feels, those scenes where there's, like, there are no characters that we know, it's just like a landscape, or just I forget exactly what it is, but it almost feels like it's not showing us the flash forward. It's almost like this, we're here in the pandemic now, and just know that nature's going to come for this, and this is what it could be. It's cool.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing starts with the theater much, mm-hmm. much after.
Yeah.
You know,
it's really
with the pigs.
Cool. Mm-hmm. That's very cool. It reminded me, I accidentally saw Kingdom of the Rise of the Planet of the Apes, or whatever that movie is called, because I tried to see a different movie. Did mm-hmm. we talk about this last week? No, because last week I thought I was going to see a different movie.
Yeah.
I ended up cutting that from the episode. I'll talk about it at the end, though, because I think it's worth mentioning. I accidentally saw the Planet of the Apes movie, despite never having seen any of the Planet of the Apes movies. It was fine, but there is a scene, because it takes place way in our future, and there is a scene where one of the apes lives underground in, like, it's like a facility that's built for the story of the movie, but it kind of looks like a subway or like an underground mall or something mm-hmm. like that, and it's all grown over, mm-hmm. and they're like climbing up this like grassy kind of ramp thing that you can tell used to be an escalator. It's like,
love it.
Yeah, it's really great. That part I really liked. Yeah,
it sounds like you're gonna keep watching this.
I'm absolutely gonna keep watching.
It's only 10 episodes too, so it's nice, you get to kind of, it's very satisfying to get to the end and know all the answers, but have experienced all the places and everything. I'm gonna probably rewatch it too. I don't know that we were recording when I said this, but I think we were. I watched the season, or the series finale of 6 Feet Under last night. I got through all five seasons, so I am now free.
You're free
to rewatch this.
Very excited to see where this goes. If listeners, if you are planning to watch and don't want spoilers for the second episode, I'm going to say something that's very vague. I think my guess is, if you watched previews for this before it came out, this won't be a spoiler for you. Mm-hmm. In episode two, starting now, in episode two, when you meet up with Kirsten and her merry band of travelers, mm-hmm. it is so very obviously they are living their Midsummer Night's Dream life. It is this group of outsider actors putting on a silly production, and they're all a little quirky, and it's I was just so charmed by that. I thought that was, yes. And it's a little on the nose
charming
for what the
band of theater kids.
Yeah. And it's like a little on the nose for what the show is, but that's what you want it to be. Like, it felt so good to just watch them all be like, there's like a little puck basically. Like, it's mm-hmm. really, really fun. So,
yes.
And that's the stuff that's making me want to keep watching.
Yeah. And that's what I meant when I said that Patrick Somerville, if you listen to him talk about this, has a sweet sincerity about this mm-hmm. show mm-hmm. that comes through in his sort of lack of cynicism when depicting a group of outsider theater kids coming together to put on Shakespeare after the world mm-hmm. ends. Like, that's...
It's exactly what it feels like. And it's very sweet and really funny. And I liked how casually queer. I think maybe that's even the phrase you used.
Yeah,
that it's
very casually queer. Yeah.
Which
not really ever mentioned.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
That's
exactly.
Cool. I like all that a lot.
Yeah.
And speaking of casually queer, I don't know anything about Mackenzie Davis as a person, but she is so important to me. Did you watch Black Mirror?
Oh, I thought you were going to say Halt and Catch Fire. Yes.
She's Yorkie.
Yeah. Yes.
She's from San Junipero.
I know.
An episode that makes me cry so hard I could throw up every time.
Yes. I know. Well, she's also in Halt and Catch Fire with Lee Pace.
Is she queer in that too?
So I can't remember, but Lee Pace is in it. And
okay.
He's just like beautiful.
He's in my number one favorite movie of all time. And...
Which is
The Fall. Maybe once we get back around to movies, we might need to watch it. It doesn't fit in with much of what we're doing, but it's a perfect movie. Well, it is 100% about the stories we tell ourselves, for sure. It's about storytelling. It's kind of all it's about.
But yeah, Mackenzie Davis, in that San Junipero episode.
It's so good. It's so good. But she's also in The Fucking Happiest Season, which is a movie we should watch.
The Fucking Happiest Season. I know.
It's a movie. We should watch that for...
At Christmas.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And we'll try to watch it a little more generously, but she's...
I tried to rewatch it this year at Christmas and was like, I'm just going to turn on Carol instead.
God, I want... It should be so good.
It should be.
It's really unbelievable what they did. It's a crime. Anyway, so yeah, I was very happy to see Mackenzie Davis. I didn't know she was in this.
Yeah. Yeah, she's fantastic.
And I am immediately, if I wasn't already on her side, because young Kirsten is, or Kirsten, I don't know how they say it.
I think it's Kirsten.
Oh, okay. Kirsten, yeah. Is so good and so likable immediately. If that weren't the case, I would have been on board as soon as I saw her.
Well, and along those lines, we've, you know, later on, this is no secret, got Lori Petty, our darling of League of Their Own and Tank Girl.
That's right. That's all you need.
Yeah. Gael Garcia Bernal.
Uh-huh.
Of one of the most important movies of my teen years.
And
Y Tu Mama También.
Y Tu Mama También. He's in a few things. He's in a lot of things, but he's in a few things I like. He's great. I think he's really great. Most importantly for me, Enrico Colantoni is in it. And that is, he is Veronica Mars's dad. He's Keith Mars. And
yes.
I love him. He's maybe my favorite. I've probably said this about 100 different people, but he's maybe my favorite TV dad of all time.
He's got an interesting role in this.
I'm excited. I know nothing about him at this point, barely.
David Cross shows up randomly.
Fun.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
And Daniel Deadweiler, who we haven't even mentioned, but she has a pretty big role here, and she just won a fucking Oscar, I think.
Oh, for what?
Didn't she? For, or she was up for an Oscar. I can't remember if she won it. Maybe not. Oh, yeah, she didn't win, but she was nominated for Best Actress as Mamie Till Mobley in Till, a movie that I was unable to make myself watch.
Yeah. I did just see her in something else, though.
Yes.
Just this week.
Yes. Should we do that now?
I was going to say, are we wrapped up?
I think so. We'll go on to our currently watching / recommendation section that sometimes shows up.
Mm-hmm. I have a huge recommendation, except I would say, if you have agreed with every opinion I've ever had on this podcast, you should run, don't walk, to see I Saw the TV Glow.
Yeah.
I loved it. And the more I think about it, the more I loved it. And the second I like sat down in this theater and it, like frame one, I was just like, oh, I'm going to be obsessed with this movie.
Yeah.
It's full vibes. You just kind of have to watch it and let it be watched and just kind of like let it flow over you. Very quickly, it's about two teenagers who bond in the early, here's the other thing, it's early 90s, it's set and then through present day, but it is very interested in its own setting of the early 90s. Two teenagers who bond over this supernatural TV show that they love that gets mysteriously canceled.
A monster of the week show.
Yeah, one of them is queer and one of them doesn't know what he is. He just knows he likes TV shows. That's when they talk about it in the beginning. That's in the preview. So, and I love that so much. And the show that they bond over is like a Goosebumps, Are You Afraid of the Dark kind of Buffy. Jane Schoenbrunn, who made this movie, and also We're All Going to the World's Fair. And they describe it as like a love letter to Buffy. There are a ton of actors. Well, they're not a ton of actors. It's not a huge script. But there are a bunch of actors who, if that description seems good to you, you'll be like, oh, look who it is. Yeah. There's a few of those in there. It's just so weird and vibesy. And also, I don't want to say the real thing that it's about, because I can't without giving away what's important about the movie.
Yeah. But I will say that if you are a person who is inclined to like things that Andrea likes, so Pop Culture Happy Hour did a podcast on it recently where they talked about it and then I believe gave like a spoiler warning and then talked a little bit more about it. And since I don't really care that much about spoilers, I wasn't sure I was actually going to see it. I am going to watch it now, but I listened to all of that episode. But if you're curious, you could listen to the beginning of that Pop Culture Happy Hour episode and see if it is up your alley. I'm excited to see it. I don't know how I'm going to feel about it, but
yeah, I don't either. I don't know how anyone but me is going to feel about this movie. It's just so, so specifically tailored to the things that I care about and things that I find pleasing and like satisfying. If you're someone who needs things to be tidy, you might be, it's so hard to say. It's really hard to say. Maybe you'll be frustrated. If you're someone who has issues with like unconventional pacing. And I can't even say if I think that the movie's pacing is slower or faster than what it's, you know, than what it calls for. All of that is frustrated. I would argue, or not even argue, I think is the case that it's all of that is purposefully frustrated in this movie.
Yeah.
In a way that I really, really liked. But in a way that like when the credits rolled, more than two people in the theater went, what? Out loud. So, but I loved it. I can't recommend it enough. If you like everything that I like.
Yeah. Yeah.
I loved it. Also, the soundtrack is incredible.
I have heard that as well. Yeah.
It's like Phoebe Bridgers and King Woman and Barty Strange and Proper, who's a band that I love, love, love. If you've never heard of Proper, go check Proper out. Their song on this is called The 90s and it's great.
Nice.
It's so good. I'm going to watch it 10 more times when I can.
Yeah, once it's out on streaming, I'll watch it. It takes a lot to get me to a movie theater. I don't know. I was never good at sitting still for them to begin with. And now after COVID, I just feel trapped when I'm in a theater. I need to be able to get up and move around.
It's a nice 80 minutes, though.
I know. That is one thing that I heard that I was like, oh, okay.
As opposed to Planet of the Apes, that was 2.5 hours of a movie I didn't even see on purpose. I accidentally bought tickets for I Saw the TV Glow a week early. And then it was the next movie starting and we were already there. And so we just saw the next movie starting. And then I watched a 2.5 hour Planet of the Apes movie.
Yeah, no. Sorry. You should be fired if your movie is over 2 hours.
There's no excuse for it at this point.
No, not at all.
Anyway.
The only thing I have to recommend is the thing I've been talking about for the last 3 weeks, which is watching the rest of 6 Feet Under if you have only seen the pilot. Because, good God, apparently I needed to cry last night because, God, the last scene, or not the last scene, the last sort of group of scenes that closes out the whole show, which if you know anything about this show, you have heard about.
Yeah.
Is still just as affecting as it was the first time I watched it. And just like, oh, and all this stuff with Claire and her mom, like anyone with a mom that's a little unusual, let's say. It's a whole thing. But yeah, really, really highly recommend.
I'll get to it eventually, probably. I'm really on this nice little 8 to 10 episode season and or series.
It's certainly easier. Yeah. Although I will say the seasons of 6 Feet Under are each about 12 episodes. So I did get through it relatively quickly. And then the only other thing I think is that the bear is coming back in a few weeks,
which we
are going to eventually talk about. Not quite yet.
Not yet.
Not quite yet, but it is coming.
You know what we have to talk about?
So should we talk a little bit about next week?
Well, yeah, but also, have we mentioned the fact that Jeremy Allen White is going to play Bruce?
Oh,
I mean, this news is like a month or more old.
I know.
But I don't think we've talked about it here.
Yeah. What do you think? You're the Bruce head.
I like it. I mean, I think, you know, it feels like trying to separate my Jersey-ness where I'm like, it's got to be somebody from Jersey, right? You can't play Bruce. Like, how can you really know if you're not from Jersey? But he is a New York guy.
Is he?
Yeah. He looks, I always think he's a British guy doing a good Chicago kind of voice, but apparently he's from New York. And Bruce is Central Jersey, so that's a little different. But I weirdly trust Jeremy Allen White. I think he can do it.
I hope so.
I'm curious. I'm interested to see his take on Bruce.
Yeah, so supposedly the movie, which is called Deliver Me From Nowhere, is written by Scott Cooper to talk about the writing and recording of Nebraska. So that should be interesting.
Yeah, I'm
who is Scott Cooper? That's what I want to know. Is he from New Jersey?
That's such a good question. Let's find out. No, he's from Virginia.
I know it is. Oh, come on now.
So I feel...
Sorry. No offense, Virginia. So he wrote Crazy Heart, Out of the Furnace, Black Mass, Hostels, and Antlers. Only two of those I've actually heard of, Black Mass and Crazy Heart.
Same, but you know, maybe that means he's a big... My hope is that means he's like a Bruce obsessive.
I hope so. Films, okay, his influences, this is a Wikipedia dive, sorry, but his influences are Thomas Wolfe and William Faulkner. And films that have influenced him include Robert Altman's Nashville, Terrence Malick's Badlands, John Huston's Fat City, and Peter Bogdanovich's The Last Picture Show. Interesting.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. I'm interested and curious, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
But I do like Jeremy Allen White, so.
Yeah.
And he'll look great in a leather jacket and a white
t-shirt. I love all the pictures. Oh, absolutely. And I love all the pictures where they've like superimposed them next to each other. Basically to be like, look, they have the same nose. Which they do have the same nose. They don't have the same mouth or eyes, but they have the same nose.
But they both have soulful eyes.
Yes. Yes. So yeah, let's talk about next week. We are staying in the apocalypse for a little bit longer. I think we kind of came to this in the moment last week where we were talking about what order we wanted to do things in next. And we realized that like we could go on a little apocalypse run.
Just for fun.
Just as a treat. Yeah. So we started it with Fallout, then Station 11. Mm-hmm. And next week we're going back underground. For Silo, which is a show that you watched before me, but we both have watched the entire first season. It is coming back for a second season. So what we know about Silo is that season 2 has finished filming, I believe, but it doesn't look like it's necessarily scheduled for this year. I think it's early 2025 is what they're saying right now. And then seasons 3 and 4 are both sort of in the planning. I don't know if they're confirmed, but they've talked about how it's ideally to them a 4-season show.
I love that. I love when they know when their out is. Been thinking a lot about why I'm so drawn to talking about post-apocalyptic shows for The Watchers in particular, because it is a genre or a setting mm-hmm. that I really like, but it's not one that I'm like, I'm not seeking out every single thing that's set like this. But there's something really interesting about when we're talking pilots, that post-apocalyptic shows really have a hurdle to jump that some other shows don't, where it's like, you really need to explain this world to us quickly and tell us what's different from every other dusty landscape, every man for themselves, which is always part of it. But like, why am I watching yours when this genre is so oversaturated at this point?
That's really true. I mean, that's one of the things that they talked about when Station 11 came out, is like, well, this is different. So this is why X, Y, and Z, sincerity, hope, like, importance of art, like all of the things we've talked about, that was sort of the argument for its existence at the time. Like, why do we want to watch a show about the end of the world?
Right.
Especially now. And that was sort of the answer for that. So I think that it'll be interesting to talk about Silo, because I don't think it's the one that either of us liked the best.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
But it's sort of an interesting intersection of a few of the ones we've watched recently. I think it has the least in common with Station 11.
Totally. There are things about it that I really liked. I think there are things about it that are going to be even more interesting to talk about in light of Fallout. And we've been really happy with a lot of what we've watched lately. And I think it's also worth being able to say, like, here are some things that miss. And I think Silo, I think the pilot especially, like, I kept watching, you know. I don't think we're asking people to waste their time by watching it. There's a lot to like.
Yeah.
But I think it'll be really easy to see in ways that I think when I talk to you about it, and maybe when we talk about it on the show, I was like, I don't know if I recommend it totally for certain reasons. And I couldn't quite articulate why. And I have a feeling now, having watched Fallout and Station 11, that's going to be a lot easier to do.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think so, too. I think that I also ended up watching the whole thing, but I ended up watching it. Like, there's a very specific difference in my experience watching all of Station 11 and the way I felt during that and the way I felt during watching Silo. Like, I just kind of kept putting it on because it was like, all right, yeah, I'll hang out there for a little while longer. Station 11, I was, like, invested in the people.
That's not to show my hand too much, but I guess I'm going to.
Yeah.
I think the setting for Silo is really cool.
It's
think it looks really cool. I like a lot of the
vertical snowpiercer.
Vertical snowpiercer. I like a lot of the questions and mysteries.
Yeah.
I did not feel super invested in the characters.
Right. Yeah. The people in it, I was kind of like, okay.
And I don't know that it's a huge priority of the show, actually,
right.
In a way that is not the case clearly for Station 11 and,
right.
and to a degree Fallout. So.
Yeah, the amount of love that people who watch Station 11 all the way through have specifically for Jeevan and for Kirsten is not the case for a lot of these shows. The only other thing I can compare it to other thing I can compare it to is Bill and Frank in Last of Us. But that was a much shorter, that was one main episode versus an entire season.
Yeah.
So.
Well. We'll see how all that goes.
But yeah, I'm curious to look at it again based on what we just talked about.
Yeah, and for our listeners too.
Yeah.
I hope you'll like it. I think it's an Apple TV show.
Cool.
Definitely go watch the show before next week. But that does feel like one that'll be easy to talk about and for folks to get a handle on even if they don't watch it. So I'm not too...
For sure.
I don't know that, you know, if you don't have an Apple TV subscription, I don't know that I'm going to... tell you absolutely should, but also go watch it if you can.
Yeah, and if not, watch the rest of Station 11.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect.
And 6 Feet Under.
Yeah.
Got a lot
to catch
up on. We'll
tell you all about it.
Where can they find us?
We're at WatchersPodNJ on Instagram. You can email us WatchersPodNJ@gmail.com.
Yeah, let us know if you have a favorite post-apocalyptic TV show.
Yeah.
Especially if it's one we haven't talked about. Or even if it is.
And like, yeah, I keep watching these forever if that's what y'all want.
I feel like I also kind of want to know what and not for, this is not a conversation for today, but maybe next week, like, what role would you play in the apocalypse? Because we've talked about how we would survive or not on Yellow Jackets, right? We've talked about how I would kind of opt out and give up and, like, you know, even though I do have some outdoor skills, I think the social stuff, I would just be like, no, I can't take any people. And I would just wander off into the woods and, like, build myself a little stick house until I died. But maybe if we shift that lens to, like, the apocalypse based on what we've seen in these movies, like,
yeah, it's
what
a little different.
Role I think, would you have?
Yeah, I'll think about it. I think I'm much more likely to survive in a case like that, like this, as opposed to Yellow Jackets. One quick note. I know we've already said goodbye. I don't know why we didn't say this last week. So nice. One of the things, maybe because we didn't get as much of it, quite as much of it in the pilot, but Ella Purnell kicking ass in Fallout feels so good, because it's like, Jackie, I knew you had it in you. I knew you could do it. Like,
yeah.
It's just really nice to see her be so capable. She's great.
Much more capable in this. Yes.
And so lovable. And she's really
good in it.
So good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's Jackie Redemption. Just want to highlight that real quick.
Absolutely. They can find me on Instagram at Jodie_Mim, JODIE_MIM.
And I'm at AQAndreaQ.
Nice. And we will see you next week underground again on the vertical snow piercer.
That's right. I could live underground. I basically do already.
You do live underground.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I'd be really good at being a weird little mole person, I think.
Maybe that's your calling. Actually, maybe that's your role in the... Yeah. You just stay in
the
vault.
Adjusts way too quickly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Ooh, you run the underground radio station.
Oh my God, that's a dream.
Yeah. You do all the announcements. Yeah.
That's great. That's perfect.
I like it.
It's basically what I'm doing now. Especially folks have not seen inside my studio, but it does look like...
You're underground.
I already feel like you could just pick my office up and move it into the silo and I would never notice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
That's definitely your role.
I feel great. I'm ready.
Yeah. I'll have to think about what mine would be, but it is... I don't think I would adjust as well. Let's just say that.
Well, we'll find out. Oh, no, I didn't mean that.
Yeah, that was
dark. We'll find out. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.